filmed 15 Pennsylvania kids who were all waiting to be adopted and asked what having a family and permanent home would mean to them.
I want a family just to accept me for who I am, to be there just to support me whenever I'm needing it.
To be matched with a family would be amazing. I won't be in a system all the time.
Visit AdoptPAKids.org to watch the video, meet the kids, and learn how you can become a foster or adoptive parent.
Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
You probably have seen those messages on TV. They've been running for quite some time now and have made many Pennsylvanians familiar with SWAN and adopting and foster care. There are nearly 400,000 children living in foster care across the country. One-third of them are waiting to be adopted, and many of them are older kids who are looking for a family, stability, and support. Voce is an organization that co-administers the Statewide Adoption and Permanency Network, SWAN, for the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services. The agency has been nationally recognized for expediting adoptions and supporting families. Joining us today is Rick Azzaro. He's the executive director of Voce, and he's also joined by Mike Isbell and Steve Pukiwa, who is they're both Voce board members and adoptive dads. Welcome to all three of you for being on the program today. Rick, let me start with you. Tell us about Voce.
Sure. Scott, good morning, and thank you for having us. Yes, Voce, what a great word. Voce, it means voice, and we use our voice to empower others to use theirs. We were formerly known as Family Design Resources, but we, over the past 2 years, have rebranded ourselves as Voce. Our primary emphasis is really kids and families. We focus on trauma and loss, adoption and permanency, diversity, equity, inclusion, and personal and family well-being. And we are based here in Harrisburg. And as an organization with our partners at Diakon Lutheran Social Ministries, we administer the statewide adoption and permanency network for the state of Pennsylvania. But really, the bottom line is, Scott, we are dedicated to improving the lives of children and families and finding solutions to the challenges that families throughout our Commonwealth face.
You're right. Voce is a word that kind of sticks with people, but as you said, meaning voice. But voice for who, Rick?
The voice is encouraging folks to be advocates for children, because it really does take a community focus. So we ask others to join our community and have a voice. But the voice is really for the children and families in Pennsylvania that really need some extra help and assistance. Much of our work focuses on children entering the foster care system that are child victims of abuse and neglect. We believe that there needs to be advocacy and a voice, a community voice for them. But we also believe we want to help them find their own voice, their own strength, their own capacity to be resilient, and their own capacity to thrive beyond abuse and neglect.
Mm-hmm. And I know I'm asking for definitions of some words and what you do, but when you say that Voce administers or co-administers the Statewide Adoption and Permanency Network, what does administers entail?
Sure. Great question. We administer SWAN, and SWAN is a very unique, one-of-a-kind program. It's not replicated anywhere else in the nation, and it is a public-private partnership. We work closely with the Department of Human Services to administer this with our partners at Diakon, and it is a public-private collaboration. So we work closely with not only roughly 70 private agencies, private nonprofits throughout the Commonwealth, but we work closely with all 67 county youth and family offices, OCYF offices. So it's really interesting, because you experience a lot of social programs that can get caught in a silo. But the truth of the matter is, this is one where really it requires the best and the brightest of both the private sector and the public sector. So by administering it, our folks at Diakon have the prime contract. They manage the financial aspects of the funding that comes down through a large state contract that is complemented with federal dollars as well. And on the VOCE side of things, we administer the services and the programs. So we work to oversee the public and private partnerships, and we have roughly 300 staff in all 67 counties dedicated to expediting permanency. And what I mean by that, Scott, permanency is a big word to suggest that every child deserves a forever family. And permanency may be returning home, it may be living with a relative, or it may be adoption. But folks would be surprised and horrified that at any given time in Pennsylvania, we have 3,000 children waiting to be adopted. So we work very hard to facilitate that process and work with the roughly 14,000 children that are in the foster care system in Pennsylvania at any given time.
Now, we're going to be talking a lot about foster care and adoption, but let me start with adoption. Rick, as you're well aware, often when people think of adoption, what they picture is a baby being adopted, a couple that maybe can't have children on their own for whatever reason, adopting a baby. But for the most part, that's not what we're dealing with, correct? We're talking about kids who are a little bit older.
That's correct. I mean, while it can include children that are babies, but you're absolutely right, Scott. The larger percentage of children in the foster care system that need adoption or are hardest to adopt are over 12 years old. So it is challenging. I mean, I can understand why some families would be reticent to bring teenagers into their homes, but working with these kids, I mean, we all deserve a family. And even as they get older and approach adulthood, I've had children say to me, "Mr. Rick, you know, yes, I'm in college now, but who do I call when I get an A? Where do I go for Thanksgiving?" So you're right, Scott, we are looking at the full range of and complement of childhood from zero to adulthood. But the hardest and most challenging children to adopt are the older youth. But I got to tell you, they're remarkable. They're resilient. They are special. They have a wisdom and just a power about them that is really humbling.
Something you just said, Rick, that it makes an impact, I think, that you know, most of the time we're thinking about these big issues, and as well we should, like, you know, children getting guidance, getting mentorship, being loved, getting support. But just those little things that a child often takes for granted with parents or a family is, who do I call when I get an A? Or who am I going to have Thanksgiving dinner with? Those things kind of, you know, we don't think of those things first, and maybe rightfully so, but that's all part of being a family.
Yes, you're correct. And we call that family privilege. Rarely do we ever look at it being a privilege to be surrounded by a support network like a family. And as sad as it is, there are plenty of children nationwide. You mentioned in the intro, Scott, that over 430 children are in the foster care system at any given time, and they all don't have that privilege. And that's the challenge, and that's our mission, is with a sense of urgency, can we assist these children to have the very basic right that all of us sometimes take for granted, which is a forever family.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Rick Azzaro, Executive Director of VOCE, along with we will be bringing in Mike Isbell and Steve Pokiwa, both VOCE board members and adoptive dads. We're talking about adoption, foster care, and mostly about older kids, but as Rick just mentioned, maybe some babies as well. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we're at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Mike Isbell, let me start with you. Tell me about your kids, or I don't know, maybe it's only one child, but who did you adopt and why?
So thank you. I appreciate you including us in the conversation. It's a very important one. And I feel like folks all over have this sort of in the back of their mind. I'm glad we can kind of explain it a little bit. My wife and I chose to adopt. We have two biological children, and we were in a moment in our life where we decided that we needed to kind of make a sort of drastic change. And I suggested we downsize to be able to contribute more to society. And my wife said, let's fill the house. And I questioned that because at the time I was wrestling with how do you raise two perfect children in the society with all the competition and whatnot. And she wanted to add more children to the mix. We went to an information session and learned, again, opened my eyes to what we just talked about. It's not just about adding a baby to the family. There's kids out there that need a home. And so we went through the process, took about a year, the training and convincing me that this is what we needed to do. Then we got paired or matched with a family. We were willing to accept two kids in the same sort of age group as our, as the two biological kids we had at the time, which were, they were like 10 and 8, I think. So my wife found profiles for three kids. And so anyway, we went to the interview process. They chose us. So we are now a family of seven. We have five kids, three adopted and three biological. So we were able to keep three siblings together. And at the time, they were 10, 8, and 2. So again, God had other plans, despite my trying to put things in a box. God had other plans, and we've not had one moment of regret through the whole process. It was painful along the way. We actually took advantage of some of the SWAN services with family counseling and whatnot as we doubled the size of our family overnight about 9 years ago. So,
when you say it was painful along the way, in what way?
No amount of training prepares you for bringing in three new individuals into your family dynamics. And so we required some help along the way just to help us assimilate, as a new family unit of seven instead of four. There's a bit of a gap there with, biological children, training them or giving them the experience to like, this is what it means. It doesn't just mean new play dates and new friends to share toys with and extra chores to get done. There's a whole inner dynamic living together as a family that requires help along the way, sort of. So we were able to get some counseling and whatnot through that process.
So tell me about the children that you adopted.
Sure.
Girls, boys, what were they like?
Absolutely. So in the profiles, the oldest daughter was diagnosed with some things and had anxiety and things like that. So basically I have, so there's two boys. My oldest and my youngest are boys, and the three girls in the middle. Currently, they are 20, 18, 18, 17, and 11. So I have three in college and one high school senior soon to be going to college. They are, have all grown into their own unique individuals. Alex, the oldest daughter, has overcome a ton and gotten beyond all of those diagnoses as a child, and is excelling as a college freshman on a cross country team in a Division II school.
You know, you said that you haven't once had a regret, but there had to be challenges along the way. What were some of those challenges?
Sure. There's challenges involved in the system early on. We knew we wanted to adopt and we wanted it to happen right away. And that's just not the process. So the process, as Rick's alluded to, can be a little convoluted. Counties are involved, agencies are involved. And so once we made a decision, we wanted to get paired right away. There's, as we mentioned, tens of thousands of kids that need homes. How come it can't happen quicker and sooner? And so the challenge of getting paired and matched, then the challenge of processing the adoption once we decided that this is what we wanted to do was, it was more the waiting game, so to speak. And then once that happens, they move into the house, and then it's the process of getting the paperwork taken care of so that we can receive the counseling that we need. So there was months where there was no counseling or anyone to talk to about, you know, the challenges we were having. So those kind of things that are, again, not ideal. And again, we had a pretty ideal situation. Other families deal with much more difficult challenges. But we were super supported by our family and our friends and our church. And again, even by some of the programs that the state sponsors.
I want to talk more about that in just a moment and hear about another family. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about adoption, about foster care, about children that are in foster care that are waiting to be adopted. And we're talking with Voce. Rick Azzaro is the executive director of Voce. Mike Isbell just told the story of his family and how it grew. And we're going to be speaking with Steve Pukiwa in just a moment. They're both Voce board members and adoptive dads. If you have a question or a comment about maybe the process, or if you're interested in adopting or becoming a foster parent, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Before we go to Steve, Rick, I wanted to ask you what Mike was referring to about the process. This is not a, as he said, the frustrating part of we thought it would happen quickly. Many people probably think that with, you know, 400,000 foster children across the country, that you'd be really trying to get them into permanent homes quickly. But that is not the case, and that's where Voce comes into the equation as well.
Yeah, correct. It isn't a quick process, and for a lot of reasons. Some of them are challenges with the system at times, but others are to assure that this process is done in the most delicate of fashion. Again, using Voce as a model, we want to make sure children have a voice. If there are birth families involved, what's their voice? The adoptive family to have a voice. So it is a delicate process because it's so critical and so important. I mean, if you think about the many things we do in a lifetime, what really is more delicate and more important than putting families together? So there is an intensive process to that. And again, to reiterate what Mike had said, kids come with histories. They come with their own prior trauma sometimes. Grief and loss related to their birth family is common. Loyalties to birth families. I mean, there is naturally an adjustment for the family that families go through. And it really is kind of a marked by an assimilation versus independence. Is how does your identity become part of this family for the adoptee? How does the family open space up for the adoptee to assimilate? And then, you know, what are the attachment issues? How do we develop as a family? And that process is a delicate one that SWAN really looks at on the front end of things. And then we also provide services after permanency to support families. But nonetheless, it is really amazing to see how many adoptive families flourish. I had one board member that we previously had that said, when we adopted our child, we thought we were doing something for them. And in actuality, they enriched our lives and changed our world in such a fashion that we didn't even anticipate how wonderful this would be. Really, they were the gem in the equation. So there's so many different aspects to this and complexities, but nonetheless, it certainly is not a quick process. And again, for some good reasons, but also bureaucracies can get into play sometimes as well, too.
We have an email from Olivia in Lancaster. She says, I adopted my child from foster care at the age of 13. She is forever a piece of my heart, and I could not possibly love her more. But adoption existing in part of someone's story in any capacity is trauma. It means something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. I encourage everyone to consider adopting from foster care because there is such a huge need. but enter into it understanding that this child whose story may unite with yours needs unconditional support and acceptance of however they feel about their experience. Listen to former foster youth, learn from their experiences, and do your own work to learn and understand. Rick, that sounds like a testimonial that a lot of people could learn from.
Absolutely. Thank you, Olivia. You're absolutely right. I mean, for a child to be a victim of some form of abuse and neglect and then need a different forever family comes with lots of disruption and lots of trauma. But at the same time, children are resilient. What we've learned over time is we all can be resilient to our trauma, and we can even get past resiliency to thrive. And I think that's what my former board member was speaking about, is not only did this child survive this trauma, they flourished and made us all better. So I appreciate Olivia's feedback, and she's right. I mean, there are at any given time 3,000 children waiting to be adopted in Pennsylvania. They need us. They need their community. Look no further than your own state if you're interested in adopting, because there isn't a single child on that list that isn't deserving of it.
This would seem to not be for every family, that not every family could handle this in a successful way. So let's look at those that are good candidates for maybe being foster parents or adopting a foster child. I don't want to ask the question of, you know, to get identities, but who are they? What are the characteristics of a family that successfully adopts a foster child?
Well, I would say the first characteristic is openness and humility. It doesn't take a lot of financial resources. As a matter of fact, it doesn't cost $1. But I would say that really an openness to the experience, being able to meet that child where they're at and their experiences, is the first precursor, and an ability to be vulnerable and know what you don't know. Be willing to learn with the child along the way, to me, is a hallmark of a good foster family. And then to reiterate with what Mike and Steve both said, support systems. I think it's critical for any family to thrive with support systems around them. And I think they're essential as well, too. But there isn't a magical formula. I'll tell you there, I've worked with so many families and at times, and I'm always curious as to what that magic equation is. And I've yet in 31 years of practice have found it. But I will tell you, core to it is an openness, an understanding of the child, the trauma, the adjustment, who that child is, the struggles they may have with identity. What does this do to the identity, the family, and then making sure you have a support system. But I would say it is a broad community of individuals out there that meet this criterion. It doesn't take a wealth of money or a model family to adopt children. It really just takes a willingness and an openness and an unconditional perspective that no matter what happens, we are going to be through this together, like folks do a lot of times with their own birth children.
Let's turn to Steve Kokia. Sorry, Steve. Tell me about your family.
Absolutely. My journey, I would share my journey to my family started for me personally when I was a little kid in Africa. I was originally born in West Africa, Sierra Leone, and my family, we moved to the States in the early 90s. And my passion for adoption, I can remember, and adopting kids and taking other kids to be part of our family. I remember having a conversation with my mother in the kitchen when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And I was just asking her what it is, what's adoption, what is the idea behind it? Because coming from Africa, it's not a particular program or a part of something that we have in place that is very common back home. So having that conversation with my mother and really expressing my passion for adoption and her seeing it, I can still remember this day. She told me, okay, you're going to have many kids. You're going to adopt many kids. And she was right. She was right. I being the youngest of eight in my family, I was lucky and blessed enough to meet my amazing partner and wife, Julie, who also had an amazing, amazing passion for adopting. She had worked in adopting agencies when she was a teenager and to college as well. She'd helped out with social programs as well. So when I was lucky enough to meet her and we had an open conversation, we had a very open conversation because I knew that that was a passion that I had even before we were married, when we started talking about kids. Listen, I want to adopt. I love the idea of adoption, and it clicked, and she felt the same way. So we knew as soon as we got married in June of 2012, the next step in our family journey was entering a program and taking that process to starting our foster to adopt. We were lucky enough to do that. This was about August of 2012. We just got married in June of 2012. And by sheer, you know, luck and blessings, we were placed with an emergency situation with our boys, our two oldest boys. They came to us in the tail end of September of 2012. So for my personal journey, it was a speedy process because we were part of the emergency situation, emergency foster situation. But we went from being married in June of 2012. We had two kids in September of 2012. And in December of 2012, our daughter, she was born in December of 2012. And that was also a private adoption as well.
That's quite a honeymoon you had there, Steve.
So yeah, so we were definitely passionate about it, and that's how our story began.
Well, when you say you were passionate about it, I mean, I have to think that it's very unusual for a 7-year-old to think about adoption. So, I mean, you started at an early age having a passion for it. Why are you so passionate about it?
Absolutely. I think my passion comes from one of the reasons we left Sierra Leone at the time was a brewing civil war that was it was erupting. So we came to the States, and knowing that there were so many children back home, that didn't have the opportunity that I had. I had to do something to give opportunity. I'm shocked and amazed at myself that I kind of understood that at a young age, but that's where my passion kind of bloomed, knowing that there was people that didn't have the opportunity that I was given. So I had to do something with this. I had to give it back. And I was lucky enough to understand that at a young age, I guess.
When, you know, we heard Mike's story and, you know, Rick talking about what Voce does. And there was a lot of training for the children, preparing them for the prospective parents, for the adoptive parents, the families, the other children in the family. But since you were in an emergency situation where it happened kind of quickly, what were some of the challenges that you had, that your family had? And I imagine that if it was an emergency situation, that there may have been some trauma involved, or that it had to happen quickly. What were some of the challenges that you faced and the family faced?
Absolutely. There's definitely some trauma involved with pretty any of these cases. All these children have their own story. They always come to you with your own story. We personally are always writing our own books. So we just have to make sure that if you enter this world of foster and adopt, you have to understand that they have their own individual books. They have their own individual pages that somehow the goal is to intermingle that and be part of that, and also have them be part of your book as well. When we were placed with our emergency situation, I remember my wife gave me a call. She's a second grade teacher. She's on a field trip. She got the call on the field trip, and she calls me, "Hey, we have an emergency situation. There's an emergency placement. Two boys need picked up today." So I look at my boss, "Hey, I got to go." And I tell him right then and there, you know, what's going on, because he was aware of what we were doing. And at the go home, I remember rushing home, making a room for two boys out of our guest room / exercise room. So I'm lugging all the equipment down to the basement, trying to make space and convert it. Because initially, yes, we knew that this was a possibility, but because it was such an emergency situation, it happened so fast, we had to react fast. But we had our support. We had our family, our friends, everybody came together. We had friends that brought us cribs because they weren't using it. We had family that went out and got groceries and baby food and everything that we needed. it was done within 24 hours. So part of, you know, our success in making that situation work was definitely our support system, our extended family and friends.
9 years later, what have you experienced along the way?
We have five kids. Our two were emergency placements, and we had our daughter was born in December of 2012. We also had, after 2 years, we knew we weren't done. My wife and I knew there was something missing. So we go back to our agency. We say, look, we know we have space, you know, in our homes, in our hearts for more kids. We know that there is, our journey's not done yet. Our book's not complete. So we went back and we replaced again, emergency situation. And we were ready for it, you know, as ready as you can be, because there's always something that comes, you know, that comes with it as well. But you have to be prepared for that. You have to be able to adjust. You have to be, to have an understanding that when you are in the foster program, when you are in the adoption program, things can change. So you have to be able to mold and make sure whatever it is you're doing, the number one thing and the priority is the children. They are the number one priority. Whatever it is, you make it work for them.
Rick, we have a question, or actually a couple questions from a listener who asked, any specific counseling required for interracial adoptions?
Well, there isn't a specific training required, although that is addressed on a case-by-case basis. We encourage that. It certainly happens all the time, all over the state. Again, I have, in 31 years, I haven't really experienced a wealth of children resistant to that. However, I will say, this is where the openness of adoptive families comes into play, is really understanding where a kid comes from, as Steve referred to, their own individual stories, and being sensitive to any racial and cultural distinctions that may occur and supporting them. And I'm amazed at how many transracial adoptions I've seen that folks, families learn things that were outside of their normal family bubble to support and encourage that child's own racial and cultural development very successfully. So we do support with that, and there is some training that we have specific to that. And it's fairly common.
Same question, same listener, I should say, had another question. What is the percentage of adoptions that don't necessarily work out? How are poor situations resolved?
Well, that's a great question. There is such a thing called an adoption disruption, and they are rare. And that's where SWAN's emphasis on the front end of things is designed not only to provide solid matches for the family and the child, but sustainable matches. Because the worst thing that we can see happen is an adoption disruption. I don't have a specific statistic. I will say that over the last couple of years, we have set record numbers in Pennsylvania and have had almost 3,000 adoptions from foster care every year. What I will say is, The game doesn't end at adoption. That's where it really begins for the family. So although SWAN has a lot of services leading up to adoption, we also provide what we call post-permanency services. And post-permanency services are services for families and adoptees after adoption to assure that the family's needs are being met, the adoptee's needs are being met, and that the family holistically is getting the support they need to prevent a disruption and assist them to assimilate.
We have a comment here from Dan in Dillsburg. Says, the guests today fill a greatly needed void in our society. Love and guidance that adopting families can provide is truly invaluable. I do know that most every time the adoption discussion happens in a public forum, it is a two-sided conversation about support and resources for the adopting family, while the third part of the triangle, the birth mother, is left aside. Birth mothers are often children themselves, and I wish we as a society were able to recognize the trauma that they go through, both during the adoption process and the situations they may find themselves in if they are able to attempt to raise their child on their own. We need better safety nets for young mothers. Rick, your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree more. I think the challenge is to take a holistic approach, is that we don't have a bias toward adoption. We have a bias toward a child having an unconditional forever family. And that forever family may be their birth family. And OCYAF and DHS have lots of services that support and assist families to prevent the need for adoption. So I do agree with that. And then additionally, we have legal distinctions for birth families, that an adoptive family may adopt children, but it may not be at the expense of the birth family. And what I mean by that is that the birth family can have what's called a PACA, a post-adoption contract agreement in Pennsylvania, that allows them to sustain a relationship with their child. And we have a number of families where the child is adopted into the family, but the birth family is still present and has a relationship with both the adoptive family and the child. And these can be remarkably successful. And in essence, what happens is you're expanding that child's loving network, but not asking them to choose between an adoptive family and a birth family. So we certainly don't have a bias against families. We at all costs want to make sure we're doing everything to keep families together. But when those situations do arise, and that is not an available option, we want to make sure that children are not stuck in the system and have unconditional positive regard in a forever family. That's a great question.
Rick, yeah, Rick, I have a couple of friends that have adopted or have been in foster resource, and they have engaged with the family, the mother, in some regards, and supported them along the way. And in some cases, the child's gone back to their mother. It's a very valid point. It's an ecosystem, right? We were able to benefit from an open adoption with regards to our kid's family. We adopted, he turns 88 on Friday. He's their grandfather. He's the reason that they're together. Mm. We're going to their family wedding, because now it's our family wedding this weekend. So it expanded. It's their family. They get to participate in that because of an open adoption situation that we agreed to 9 years ago, and we're all better for it.
Right.
One final question. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. But Rick, one final question: if someone listening today was interested in adopting or maybe being a foster parent, how could they do that?
What I would encourage people to do is go to the adoptpakids.org website. SWAN also has a helpline that they can access through there as well too. And for folks that want to learn more about Voce, our website is VoceTogether, all one word, .org. And you can learn more about some of our other programs outside of SWAN. And finally, Scott, what I would say is, listen, there are a lot of great social causes out there, but I think few would dispute the importance of caring for the children in our community and our society. So I would encourage your listeners to get involved in a way that feels comfortable with them. Maybe it's adopting, maybe it's advocating for children, maybe it's supporting us or other programs. But at the end of the day, I think we all have an interest in making sure the next generation has the love and the support and the unconditional place to lay their head in that forever family that they deserve. So I would encourage your listeners to get involved with us and other organizations. And you can learn more about us or support us on our website or check out Adopt PA Kids. Hmm.
Rick Azzaro is the executive director of Voce. And by the way, that's spelled V-O-C-E. Mike Isbell and Steve Pokiwa are adoptive parents and have great stories to tell, and very supportive of the organization and adoption. Thank all three of you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.